Welcome to NGA Notable Lectures, a podcast offering a deeper understanding of all things artistic. By the early 1970s, Washington, D.C.-based artists like Sam Gilliam, Thomas Downing, and Alma Thomas were associated with the nationally recognized art movement known as the Washington Color School. While Kenneth Young's staining technique and interest in abstraction and color were consistent with his Washingtonian neighbors, critics at the time labeled Young as an abstract expressionist. Recently, however, Young's work has been more closely discussed within the context of the Washington Color School. In this lecture at the National Gallery of Art on April 8, 2019, Sarah Battle examines Young's educational background, profession, and artistic influences, and discusses the ways in which the artist's practice aligns with, and outside of, the confines of the Washington Color School.
In the fall of 2016, I greeted artists, donors, board members, and some staff to a black tie event celebrating the East Building's reopening. My main job that night was to help guide guests to the newly rehung gallery spaces. Unbeknownst to me, in attendance, was artist Kenneth Victor Young. Young was excited to see, for the very first time, his painting, Red Dance, hanging in the gallery space dedicated to the color field paintings. I greeted hundreds of folks that night, and I like to think that one of those interactions could have been with him. My research on this particular artist, however, started a year after the East Building reopened. I chose Red Dance as the focal point of a gallery talk. Before selecting this work, I had never heard of Kenneth Young. I simply liked the painting. When I first saw Red Dance, I remember three aspects that caught my eye: scale, color, and composition. First, the scale. You can't tell by the image, but this work is 84.5 inches by 64 inches. So think 7 feet by 5 feet. I was also drawn by the bright orbs of color. Some orbs are distinct, pure balls of color, and others seem to overlap and morph with other orbs. When I give gallery talks on this painting, I always ask a question about the focal point. I think this is really interesting because it shows the harmony of this painting, and negative space in this way becomes equally as exciting as the painted areas. When you add the title as potential context to the non-representational work, the sense of movement is heightened. This work is titled Red Dance, and when you connect the title to the painting, the sense of movement created by the fluidity of color is reassociated with lyrical composition. Red Dance was, and still is, hanging in the Color Field Painting Gallery. When I tried to learn more about the artist and the context of this painting, I discovered that there was very little written on the artist. This struck me because there is so much scholarship on the other artists represented in the room. And as you can see, Morris Lewis, Sam Gilliam. And Sam Gilliam, Morris Lewis, these are household names. So why isn't Kenneth Young's? Over the last year and a half, I've begun to understand how vital archival material can be to shape an artist's legacy. The accessibility of knowledge significantly shapes the stories institutions can tell. My research was compiled through a variety of ways, visiting universities and commercial galleries, cold calling institutions around the US, and meeting with folks who knew Kenneth Young personally. I'm indebted to many people's time and memory, and will share my thanks at the end of the presentation. Lastly, my talk today is not an overview of the artist's life. While I have been researching and reading anything I can find about Kenneth Young, today's talk will focus on three topics: his formative years as an art student, his artistic practice and influences, and his social network in the 1970s. Kenneth Victor Young did not grow up determined to be a full-time artist. Rather, his educational background is in the natural sciences. In college, Kenneth Young majored in physics. He worked at DuPont as a chemical engineer and then was drafted in the Navy. After 2 years of being in the Navy, he decided to enroll in a graduate program in chemical engineering at the University of Louisville. When he arrived at the University of Louisville, he began to hang out with many artists and MFA graduate students. He loved to debate philosophy, listen to jazz, and discuss the art world with Scroop. Fred Bond, a former classmate, once wrote that Kenneth Young's, quote, contemporaries and friends, the late Bob Thompson and Sam Gilliam, formed a group from which the most definitive and persistent discussion, sometimes lasting for weeks, arose. And so it came to no surprise to the group that in 1959, Kenneth Young switched tracks to fine arts and ultimately received the Allen R. Height Scholarship. This prestigious scholarship is still offered today, and recipients include Sam Gilliam and Robert Douglas. Robert Douglas, who remained in Louisville and eventually became an art professor at the university, shared that Young, Douglas, Gilliam, and Thompson, along with some others, created what would be a short-lived but influential art group called the Gallery Enterprises. Gallery Enterprises received its momentum after Robert Douglas secured a space at the back of a downtown bar. And now I'm gonna pause and just say, I'm sorry, I have no photographs of this period, so you're gonna have to stare at this image for a while. Douglas, along with Kenneth Young and Fred Bond, encouraged art majors to take over the space. The space hosted several quote-unquote happenings in 1960 and 1961. It offered local artists, students, and interested Louisville residents the opportunity to offer critique sessions and poetry readings. Classmate Fred Bond described the happenings as a church experience. Quote, it was here that several of us would meet with church-like regularity and devotion to explore, debate, and expound upon the esoteric qualities of jazz, and to speak of philosophies and matters of culture, unquote. The local newspaper, Courier Journal, wrote about these happenings frequently, and Young was quoted throughout his time there. In an article published in April 21, 1960, the journalist mentions the following, quote, Kenneth V. Young perceptively expresses this, painting for me is born out of the desire to find unity in this chaotic existence of which I'm a part. The University of Louisville has not maintained records of their undergraduate and graduate students enrolled in the late 1950s and early 1960s. So it is unclear what styles Young was exploring during this program. But it is clear that the artistic group was impacted his formative years as an artist. The group Gallery Enterprises significantly exposed Kenneth Young to a world of mentorship, cross-disciplinary discussions, and encouragement of experimentation. Kenneth Young moved to Washington, D.C. around 1964 after accepting a job as one of the first African-American exhibition designers at the Smithsonian. Classmate Sam Gilliam hosted him for several months as Young gained his bearings and moved his young family to their new home. While I do not know when or why Young began staining his canvases with bright orbs of color, his unique staining process and general aesthetic was similar to the treatment others in the district were beginning to become well known for. In 1965, there was a landmark exhibition at the now defunct Washington Gallery of Modern Art titled The Washington Color Painters. It highlighted six DC-based artists who were all interested in the essential elements of painting: canvas, color, shape. Critics, curators, and museum professionals called this trend the Washington Color School. The six painters originally associated with the group, Morris Lewis, Kenneth Nolan, Jean Davis, Thomas Downing, Howard Maring, Paul Reed, knew of each other and did hang out in groups. DC is very small, but the term school in Washington Color School is a little deceptive. These painters did not come from a specific university or club. Rather, they were handpicked by a museum curator for their similar treatment of acrylic paint on Broad Campus. This local art movement gained national attention in the 1960s and the 1970s. As the Washington Color School gained popularity, other DC-based artists working with bright colors and abstract compositions also began to be associated with the Washington Color School. So for example, Sam Gilliam and Alma Thomas. During the late 1960s and throughout the 70s, Kenneth Young's work was described in terms of abstract expressionism. Young's first major art show in Washington was in 1968. Jacob Canning, a curator at the Smithsonian and an artist and a collector in his own right, wrote a curatorial statement for the show. Quote, "Thus, while Young shares some technical concerns with other members of the Color School, his point of view is basically that of an expressionist. Cloudy, melting forms have an indefinably symbolic quality that goes beyond the decorative to a basis in emotional experience. This largeness of feeling is the ultimate test of an artist and remains when the schools and tendencies are forgotten." So this made me wonder, what set him apart visually? So as you look at these two works, Red Dance by Ken Young and Black Popcorn by Gene Davis, you might be able to more easily see the differences. Ken was interested in soft edges, while others were interested in hard edges. The Washington Color School was interested in geometric shapes, while Kenneth Young was interested in organic forms. Pattern versus fluidity, et cetera, et cetera. The staining technique is also similar, but yet different. They both stain their canvases, so if you think about a paper towel absorbing the liquid of like when you use it every day, that's sort of the process there. And so Kenneth Young, he would have built these orbs through layers of acrylic paint, water, solvent. So the orbs have different level of layers, and so it's inconsistent throughout the painting. But if you looked at Gene Davis's Black Popcorn very closely, you would see the paint is a consistent layer. While his aesthetic goals differed from those originally associated with the Washington Color School, he too enjoyed experimenting with the staining process. Kenneth Young wrote in 1972, "I put the color down with a brush on raw canvas, which is sometimes dampened in places. I use acrylic dyes. I spray water on it to thin it in places. I take a sponge and take out the excess water in other places. Edges are important to me. The edges of the forms and shapes, the edge of the stretcher itself. Beginnings and endings are important to me. Movement on my canvas is mainly what I'm all about now." Leslie Young shared that her father would have taken an unstretched canvas and either placed the canvas on the floor or on a desk. So you can see here in the photograph, he's painting on the floor. So as a reminder, for those who may not be familiar, what I mean by unstretched canvas is that he would have taken the canvas, made his composition, and the stretcher, which is seen here, would have been patiently waiting for him to be finished with the painting. He would have taken the canvas and stretched it over that stretcher. And this is important because when you think of the canvases you can buy at Michael's, you have to know what your composition is ahead of time. And by not stretching it and just creating the composition before, it allows him to play with the space that would surround his forms. He could make a decision later. I know that his canvases were unstretched at first because of the back of the paintings. So you can see here he would have stretched the canvas over the stretcher, and then he would have folded it or cut the canvas to whatever dimensions he wanted and stapled it. And the back of the painting, you can also see the built-up that he did in his work. While I have no documentation of what he used to help dilute the paint, I recently had the opportunity to experiment with staining techniques. Through my personal observations, I quickly learned that Young used a range of water and solvents to create the organic orb shapes that overlap each other. I also learned that Young must have had a great deal of practice with these materials to secure the aesthetic he wanted. Acrylic paint dries very quickly, And if you do not know the visual repercussions of the ratio between acrylic to water or water to solvent, the bright, beautiful colors you have access to might quickly blend into unpleasing hues or tones. And I just want to point out here, you can see the watermark. This observation is important because it complements the idea that Kenneth Young's education in the natural sciences would have served him very well making these organic compositions. His work often achieves a harmony by balancing the notion of microscopic and universal, or looking at space. Some folks think Red Dance looks like a petri dish, while others perceive the spatial relationships in terms of the infinite. The duality in the composition pushes the viewer to continue to look at the painting. Further, in my research, I have not found any studies. The lack of preparatory studies leading to these masterpieces suggests to me Young's ability to execute a particular optical effect. The size of his canvases further suggests his confidence and skill. During my research, I was struck by the relationships Young cultivated with artists and gallery owners associated with the Washington Color School. By 1968, Kenneth Young met Jacob Kanin, a curator at the Smithsonian. And Jacob introduced Ken to the famous Washington gallery owner, Franz Bader. Franz Bader is credited for helping many artists gain national recognition. Alma Thomas, for example, was another DC artist he represented. Franz Bader Gallery represented Young's work from 1968 to about 1977. And in that span of the time, Kenneth Young had solo shows at the Corcoran Gallery, National Academy of Sciences, Studio Gallery, and Fisk University. So on the screen, you can see Franz, and you can also see the flyers he would have mailed out to people that he knew would be interested in Ken Young's work. He had a number of sources he would push out Ken Young's work through, and so you can see in the screen the Art Gallery magazine. It is publishing just Ken Young's painting, Red Dance. And then in the third slide, you can see a calendar listing promoting Ken Young's opening. Franz Bader was very connected in DC, and so he would write to museum directors all the time promoting Ken Young's work. And so on the left, you can see examples of David Krieger, a note to David Krieger of the Krieger Museum. And on the right, I just wanted to emphasize how intentional the Franz Bader Gallery was to select people that had status in DC as a curator, as an artist, or as a collector. And having Jacob write the curatorial statement for his first show really emphasized his stature. One of my favorite observations I've had so far is looking at the invitation lists. So you can see through the arrows here, Miss Duncan Phillips of the Phillips Collection was invited. Doesn't seem like she was gonna come though. And then Miss Alma Thomas. So I don't know if this was a formality that Franz Bader invited Alma Thomas to every single opening, but he did. And she never signed the guest book, so I have just concluded she did not come. But DC is very small, and I'm sure they knew each other. Her name comes up a lot in my research. Their paths crossed quite frequently. As I mentioned, Kenneth Young was an exhibition designer at the Smithsonian Museum of History and Technology. So don't go on the mall, because that museum doesn't exist. It is now the American History and the Air and Space Museum that embodied the collections. Young designed exhibitions that focused on historical topics like the rise of Gandhi or in the importance of religion. His exhibitions traveled internationally, providing him the chance to install in various settings. Leslie Young shared that her father spoke fondly of his trips to Italy, Egypt, and India. Through his role as an exhibition designer, Young was able to maintain the ethos of the gallery enterprise. He forged friendships with professors throughout his career, and the first noted partnership was with a fine art class led by Dr. David Driscoll. In 1969, Dr. Driscoll was the chairman of the art department at Fisk University. He forged a partnership between Fisk University and the Smithsonian to create a summer intensive course exposing art majors to museum professions. So this group curated an exhibition titled Color Me Mankind, and you can see this is an installation shot of the exhibition. This exhibition was historic because it was the first one that elevated, quote, urban stories of African-American life, unquote. The exhibition gained national recognition and was supposed to travel to Fisk University and other cities in the Midwest. In a phone conversation with Dr. Driscoll, I was able to confirm Kenneth Young's involvement. He remembers meeting Young during the two trips he came down to Washington and suggested that I talk to the main star of the program, Gloria Brown. So Gloria is actually the woman here looking at the sign. Gloria recalls that Kenneth Young was not the only African-American employee on the exhibition team, but he was the only African-American artist. He took it upon himself to mentor this group of students by inviting them to his studio, visiting art gallery openings and exhibitions with them throughout the summer, and helps connect the students to other African-American artists in DC. So she shared she was able to meet Sam Gilliam that summer because of Ken Young. In this interview, she shared that his generosity at the time was a common trait among the artists associated with Dr. Driscoll's program. This past summer, George Washington University's Luther Brady Gallery curated a show highlighting the Washington color painters, which included Young's work. After meeting with the curator, Lenore Miller, I discovered that she too had a professional relationship with Young since the 1970s. She consistently relied on his mentorship for her art students throughout his career as an exhibition designer. She also shared that she exhibited his work on numerous occasions. For example, at one point, she included a triptych titled Nikki's Dream. So I just would like to point out that the triptych is atypical of Young's practice. First of all, the scale here is huge, 96 inches by 145 inches. I also would like to point out that the canvases would have been pre-stretched, so he was given these panels. When I first learned about the triptych, I thought to myself, who is Nikki? I still do not know the answer to that question. But around the same time I learned about the painting, Margot Stein at the Bethesda Fine Art Gallery shared a number of photographs of Young with me. So as you can see, Ken Young is sitting and Nikki's Dream is in the background. So I would like to point out that I think this is the Corcoran Gallery based on the floors and the molding on the walls, but I'm not positive. And I believe this is for his solo exhibition in 1974. But unfortunately, the records for that exhibition are no longer available. They were not kept. So I do not know the checklist for that show. Around the same time, a private collector reached out to me to share that they believed that they owned Nikki's Dream, and they wanted me to see it. So I came out, I went to her house, and turns out it was not the same triptych, second triptych. And these are two panels. We could not remove the veil, you can see here, because it would have taken so long to put it back up. So I apologize for the images. The third panel, you can see in this photograph, Ken standing next to the triptych. And you can kind of get a sense of the scale of this work. During the visit, I discovered that on the back of one of the panels, there was a sticker adhered to it. And you can see it says St. Mary's College in Maryland. And so in 1976, this painting was there, and we can tell that the title is called Miles Davis. I wrote to the staff at St. Mary's College, hoping to learn about an exhibition or an explanation for why this triptych was there. Unfortunately, there are no records of a show from that period in general, or documentation of a relationship with the artist. Staff could only theorize that he stored the triptych for a period of time, for whatever reason. So let's check this out. At first glance, you might think they look completely different, But I would like to take a moment and just remind everyone that this painting was made, these two triptychs were made in the same year. And although the colors are not exactly the same, both have blues, yellows, hints of red, dark blues. And the compositions for some of these panels are pretty similar. So you got the top half is where the movement is, the orbs of color, and the bottom half are where he plays around with blue acrylic paints. And the orbs are going in the same direction, it seems like, towards the top center. So it's just interesting to compare the two panels. Around this time, I connected with DC legend and art dealer Ramon Osuna to learn whether he had a relationship with the artist. At the time of Kenneth Young's death, the Washington City paper published an article that suggested that Ramon Osuna knew Young. To my delight, he shared that he knew Kenneth Young later in Young's life. And so you can see by these photographs, they were hanging out. And Ramon Osuna actually sold a work of art to the foundation to a foundation in Chicago. And so I wrote to the foundation, and they confirmed they owned a triptych, but it was not called Nikki's Dream. And I thought to myself, there's three triptychs? What? So this one's called Fall of Rebel Angels. But then I found out, after they sent me a picture of the triptych, it was actually Nikki's Dream. So in 1976, by that time, Kenneth Young changed the triptych's name. So I referenced both in the title. And I don't know why, and I don't know exactly when. Still looking for that. Leslie's comments about the importance of travel. Leslie comments that travel in Kenneth's life was very important and impacted his art. She was able to travel quite often with her father during the last years of his life. She recalls he would reflect on his trips to Italy frequently. The Thoma Foundation had a fellow in residence last year, Dr. Jen Cohen. She has written extensively on this painting, so if you would like to learn more about the work, I would go on the foundation's website. But in the wall text label for the work, she echoes Leslie's observations. Young's travels impacted his work. For example, Young would have seen a record number of triptychs in Italy, and so this format and title for the work may have been intentionally reflecting his interests in the works of art he was able to see in situ. So after 10 months of sleuthing, I actually was able to see this work in person. And for scale, on a good day, I'm 5'1". So there's that. As I shared, the Courier-Journal faithfully wrote about Young throughout his life as an artist and exhibition designer. One quote that I've been drawn to is from this 1970 article that shares Young's work process. Quote, "The problem was, how could the philosophy of Gandhi that made him so famous be made a basis for an exhibition? How would you make visible the principle of nonviolence or the virtue of compassion?" His work as an exhibition designer and his interest in the hard sciences significantly shaped the way you look at his art. In both careers, he was interested in making the invisible visible, the intangible tangible. His work, in a sense, is an immersive experience. And I would like to share this quote. It says, "These in-between spaces hold up, giving format and liquid quality of the canvas surface. I equate this form of accident with patterns that happen with living things. The life of the color holds within itself a mood quality that I feel is human." As I continue to analyze the ways in which critics, collectors, and museums have historically characterized Young's work, I cannot help but return to a term Gloria Brown Simmons used in our phone conversation this past January. So the whole time she referenced Young's work in terms of experimental abstraction. When I heard this term, I immediately fell in love with the label because I think it explains his process and aesthetic goals perfectly. His titles like Red Dance, Miles Davis, or Fall of Rebel Angels hint at personal connections. Whether it be associated with a fleeting memory of listening to jazz or a tribute to a work trip. To me, these paintings evoke some sort of emotional response. And since these works are non-representational, Young opens up the interpretation to allow for the viewer's personal associations with a color or shape or form to take hold. I think this tension between the subjective and objective is what complicates Kenneth Young's legacy as a Washington color painter. His work was always on the fringes of the Washington Color School. When asked what his thoughts were about never being associated with a local group, he shared, quote, "I felt like they didn't recognize me as being part of their movement. I was an outsider. I don't know, because I wasn't from Washington, because I didn't go to Black Mountain College. Those are the things that get people into a movement." Kenneth Young's work, time and time again, begs me to re-examine the ways in which a viewer can interpret his work. My research has also pushed me to think about the ways in which artists are remembered through time. While it is frustrating Kenneth Young was not properly recognized throughout his life, I hope my research begins to shed light on why his work stands in the National Gallery of Art today. Thank you.
This has been a National Gallery of Art podcast.